Today's reading is from James chapter 5, verses 1 to 6. Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the days of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you.
Money. Just the word, I think, sends the chills down the spine of the average Australian Christian. There's lots of reasons why that's the case, but first, people love quoting the famous Bible verse that says, money is the root of all evil. Now, that has all sorts of implications, but it's also a misquote of the Bible. That's not what the Bible says. It actually says in 1 Timothy 6:10 that the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. For the only thing that we should truly love is the Lord Jesus. So loving money is a bad idea, but money itself is not a bad idea. Indeed, money is a great idea. It's a great resource that helps us manage life together. More than that, it's a gift from God to each one of us to use for His glory. Every dollar you have and all that you own is God's. And what you do with it matters. So I want to start this morning by saying not thinking about money is a bad idea. Secondly, I suspect most Christians believe that, but then they'll tell you shouldn't talk about money because it's a private thing. And so the sermon ends now. Thanks for coming. Again, sadly, people who think that money is a private thing that ought not to be talked about have forgotten to read their Bible, because Jesus put money on the public agenda as a topic of conversation over and over and over again. He rebuked the selfish rich. He commended the generosity of the poor. He encouraged the payment of taxes. And he got angry at financial abuse. He warned against being choked by riches, and he told his disciples to travel without money and to rely upon the riches and the generosity of other people. Indeed, Jesus talks more about money than he does talk about faith or heaven or hell. Not talking about money is a bad idea. And then it comes to giving it away. And some will say, you just give 10% and then you're fine. It's all done then. Other people will call that outrageous and impossible in this day and age. Both sets of people need biblical wisdom. Did you know that the Old Testament 10% tithe was just the beginning of the generosity that was expected of the people in the days of Moses? And then Jesus' radical transformation of generosity commends the woman who gave all she had. And he noted that the rich threw in large amounts of money of no consequence, but that true generosity is not based on percentage, but based on sacrifice. So not being generous with money is a bad idea. Money. We've all got some. But my guess is that for some, the thought of managing it causes anxiety. And for others, you're anxious because you feel you need more. And perhaps for most of us, the idea of giving it away raises the most anxiety of all. I've known all of these sorts of anxious feelings. And I also know that accumulating more is not the solution. What we actually need is a different starting point for our thinking about money. And I think the different starting point we need is actually excitement. We need to get excited about the money that enters into our bank accounts. We need to get excited about the money that we are given week to week in whatever way that comes. And we need to cultivate this sense of true excitement for the money that God gives us. For when God, by His grace, gives you skills and a job and income, and for some, the savviness to invest and earn even more, when God, by grace, gives you money, you ought to be excited about the opportunity that it places in your hands to change the eternal destiny of people in the world. Now, you can't spend every cent you have on that. But you do have, so you do have a responsibility to support yourself and your family. But the eternal destiny of real people can be changed through your generosity. And the fact that in a church like this, almost everyone has the potential to both earn and have lots of money, this is excellent news. This is super exciting news because we've been provided with a wonderful opportunity to generously provide for kingdom work. But we're not going to get there by fearing money or being silent about money or by hoarding money. We are going to get there by encouraging each other to use what we have for what is best. By using what you have so people might come to know Jesus. Now, here's another reality. All that is required for gospel growth here in St. Ives and for us to impact the world is actually already here. It's already in our pockets and in our accounts. It's already here. We just need to catch the vision, align our priorities, and get going. And I say we all, me included, need to actually catch the vision that the eternal destiny of those who live among us, our family and friends, is of greater importance than a new whatever or a second whatever or a better whatever or a bigger whatever, whatever. Having a new, second, bigger, better whatever is not wrong. But what's better than all those things is using the gifts that God has given you financially to ensure that as many people as possible can receive the greatest gift in the world, and that is the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, James 5 is going to help us. And particularly if we're not giving generously, because it's not that these rich people are condemned for being wealthy. Being wealthy is not a sin. These people are condemned for their sinful use of wealth, including selfish accumulation. And just perhaps this is where this text is going to hit home for us. For in our culture here, amassing wealth is not only condoned, it is admired. And as Christians, we need to ask ourselves seriously, what am I doing with this gift that God has given me? Now, clearly, James thinks the people he's speaking to need to take an urgent look at themselves and their actions when it comes to money. And so look with me again from verse 1. It says, "Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you." The whole verse has that sort of Old Testament prophetic feel about it, doesn't it? The weeping, the wailing, the misery, and justifiably so. Indeed, the word wail here is only ever found in the Old Testament in the context of judgment, as the self-absorbed rich are instructed to cry out because of the misery that is coming upon them at the hand of the Lord for the way that they've used their money. So what James is saying here is that the way these people are using their money is showing the reality of their heart, and that that then has eternal consequences. Now he continues to write and provides four reasons why these rich people are destined for condemnation. And the first one is that they selfishly hoard wealth. Have a look with me from verse 2. It says, "Your wealth has rotted, and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded, and their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days." Now, I know that those with an inclination towards science and technology and engineering are now sort of shaking their heads and smirking to themselves because they know that gold and silver can't corrode. The rest of us, who are humanities-type people, are looking at this verse going, how do I avoid what it really means? Well, what exactly is James doing here? It's not a science lesson. This is a faith lesson. And his language here is being used to just make one simple point. All the material things that we have are transitory. They're unreliable. They're temporary. And they ought to be used with that in mind. They're brilliantly useful for making things happen now, but blindingly useless for building your eternal future. So in the case of these people that James is speaking to, they have wealth, but they're doing nothing with it. So it's just sitting in a pile rotting. And they have possessions, but they're doing nothing with them, so the moths are eating them. They're hoarding wealth without realizing the times, and all of it will testify against them and bring judgment from God down upon their heads. And you cannot help but hear Jesus' parable, can you, of the rich man who had an abundance of possessions, and he sowed another harvest, and that harvest was so abundant that he thought to himself, I need to build bigger barns so that I can sort of get all of this wealth in one place. And Jesus says to his hearers in Luke chapter 12, verse 15, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. So the guy in the parable and the rich in James are storing earthly goods as if there is nothing more than this life and this life's needs. And the problem is, they're not watching God's clock. And they're not adopting God's priorities. Indeed, people who only accumulate without being generous with all God has given them are not only demonstrating utterly wrong priorities and a complete misunderstanding of time, they're depriving others of life. Secondly, these rich in James's time defraud their workers, verse 4. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you, and the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. Friends, these people have the money, they just refuse to pay their workers, which is a great strategy to get more and more money, isn't it? And they're dishonest and dishonorable. And James swiftly moves our eyes from this earthly injustice to the heavenly result. The Lord is aware, and their fraud has not escaped his attention, and the pain of the people has reached his ears. And indeed, you can be sure that the Lord sees everyone who misappropriates funds or defrauds workers and will judge them accordingly, for they're demonstrating an utterly wrong set of priorities and a complete misunderstanding of time and depriving others of life. Third, these people seek an indulgent lifestyle. Verse 5. You've lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You've fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. Luxury and self-indulgence. Extravagant comfort and personal excess. Unceasing ease and unrestrained enjoyment. Lacking sacrifice. Lacking boundaries. Lacking self-denial. Lacking care of others. Lacking generosity. Embracing opportunity without considering anyone else, any other priorities, any other needs, any other uses for their time and resources. You know, when I read this verse, the first thing I thought of was Jabba the Hutt in Return of the Jedi. And that scene where it's just opulent. He's got Leia on a leash, which is in a PG movie. I don't know what's going on with that, but anyway. He's got Leia on a leash, he's got food, he's got whatever he wants all around him in his opulent, indulgent palace filled with every indulgence. But I actually think James's picture is just a little bit more simple. His critique here is against any thoughtless indulgence. and any wasteless spending. It's against careless or extravagant spending on pleasures and desires when people make themselves like prized cows who grow fat on the prime grass that's just outside the abattoir. And the cows have a great time. And those cows are thinking to themselves, I'm living my best life, until the roller door goes up. And the end is upon them. And so again, you can be sure that the Lord sees everyone who wastefully spends or is needlessly indulgent and will judge them accordingly, for they're not only demonstrating utterly wrong priorities and a complete misunderstanding of time, but they're depriving others of life. And finally, they oppose the righteous. Verse 6. You've condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you. Again, it's impossible to read these words without thinking about Jesus, the lone and wonderful man who was betrayed by another man who was always worried about the accumulation of wealth. Jesus did not resist his capture and betrayal and death, but I think James has a broader target. For the innocent one or the righteous one here is the person who by the actions of the rich is being deprived of life even to the point of death. Their lack of generosity and their lack of care perhaps has led to the death of neighbours and friends who they had no reason not to help. And you can be sure that the Lord sees everyone whose eyes are only for themselves and who lack generosity and care of others and will judge them accordingly, for they are not only demonstrating utterly wrong priorities and a complete misunderstanding of time, but they're depriving others of life. So there's the four reasons why these rich people are destined for condemnation. And boy, aren't we lucky that James is speaking to the people back then and that none of this applies to us. Friends, if you can't see yourself here, if you can't see your tendencies here, I suspect you're not looking hard enough. You don't need to be rich or think you're rich to behave like these people in James 5. And if you're wondering what you really believe about money, ask the people around you what they think. Or even more challenging, if you have kids, ask your kids how they think they should use money. And that will be telling, because I suspect they've learned whatever they've learned from you. I long for things that glitter. And I've had to learn and have to continue to learn generosity and the avoidance of just stacking up wealth. And Nikki and I have conversations at home about giving to church or compassion or other kingdom projects. And I honestly say in my head sometimes, when Nikki says, how much do you reckon we should give to this? I honestly say in my head, what is the smallest number that I can say without appearing silly or embarrassed? I've had to learn to be generous. It doesn't come naturally, and I'm still learning by just doing it. And so let us all learn and grow by honestly asking ourselves, what am I doing with this gift that God has given me? As C.S. Lewis says, prosperity knits a man to the world. He feels that he is finding his place in it, while really it is finding its place in him. And in the end, I think we need to stop and truly assess our love affair with the dollar and the stuff we can accumulate and the places we can go because of it. Often when it comes to our finances and generosity, we look more like we are friends of the world than friends of God. And I don't know many Christians who on payday are brimming with excitement about seeing the money leave their bank account for kingdom work. But there ought to be more, because that money can change the eternal destiny of those who don't yet know Christ. But to brim with such excitement would be the exact opposite of the behavior that's condemned in James 5, right? Rather, we live in an indulgent culture where when you hear a song, you buy it. When a new movie comes out, you see it. When a new restaurant opens, you go to it. When coffee prices go up, you still drink it. When fuel prices go up, few of us say, whew, I'll catch public transport from now on. My suspicion is that we would all agree that radical generosity is a good thing. But few of us are really ready to be radically generous. Some because we don't have enough, and others because we can never have enough. For many, we're sold out to the great Australian dream. Work hard now so you can retire to luxury and indulgence with enough to live where you want, do what you want, see what you want, have what you want, and go where you want. We may not be abusing or killing people in the process, but the desires that fuel what James rebukes here are often the same desires that are in our hearts, if we're honest. One person said to me a while back that they heard their colleagues who earn a similar amount to them talking about winter plans to fly here and do this and visit here and go there and buy this. And they paused and thought to themselves, that's really weird. We earn the same amount, but I don't feel like I can afford those things. And then they remembered that they give away more than 10% of their income deliberately for the benefit of kingdom work. Now, I'd love to tell you at that point that they rejoiced and were brimming with excitement at the next pay packet that was going to come in. But they found self-denial difficult. And this friend of mine needed to remind themselves to watch out, to be on their guard against all kinds of greed, because life does not consist in the abundance of possessions or the accumulation of experiences. And I wonder, friends, if you need the same reminder. And I wonder if in reality it's time for change. And what it's really time for us to do is to think about this, to talk about this together, and to seek to change the way we use our money. If you've never given a cent, I want to encourage you to start. If you only give meagerly, I want to encourage you to change. If you give generously, I want to encourage others to catch your vision. If you do give generously, I want to ask you, who could you talk to about it humbly and carefully and gently? Well, how do you recover from having made bad decisions? How do you recover from having made decisions to manage your money with luxury and self-indulgence? Can I suggest it's simple? Just go back to the cross again. And see the moment where God gave everything for you. Start seeking His forgiveness and start again with God. Start listening to His voice on money and doing what it says. And remember that it's never too late to change, and that God is only too ready to forgive always. And then commit to doing what is good with God's gifts and make the change that you want to see today. So does the way you think about or use your money demonstrate wrong priorities and a misunderstanding of time? And what is one step you could make for change this week?